To sync this podcast to the episode, pause now and hit play right after the previously on.
We are here, Matt Roberts and Tony Graffia are here for the podcast of The Birds and the Bees. And we've got, I cannot believe this, but our whiskey for this week, which Matt's assistant, Madeline, found for us, is so cool. It is Two Gingers. How awesome is that? I think some of you may suspect the meaning behind that.
Well, they've already seen the episode, so I'm sure they know exactly what we're talking about.
Yes, and this is The Birds and the Bees, written by myself and Matt.
And I don't think we actually properly introduced ourselves. I'm Matt Roberts, executive producer on Outlander, and you're...
Tony Graffia, writer, executive producer.
Oh, also. Right. Sorry. Writer, executive producer.
Writer.
Yeah. We're both writers.
We wrote this episode, which is we were dying to write all season. It was super exciting. It's called The Birds and the Bees. And I have to read you the email chain because right before we started the podcast, we were saying, who came up with this title? And we were kind of arguing about it. And Matt said that he came up with it. And he said he challenged me to look up the email. So I found it, and it's back from March 9th, and Matt wrote, maybe we title 409 The Birds and the Bees. I said, OMG, I actually kind of like that. And he says, there's something kind of dark about it, plus there's actually birds and bees. And I wrote, oh, and the bird's nest with the baby's birds. I think we have to do this. And he wrote back, funny thing, I almost added it to the production draft. And I wrote back, I fucking love it. And there you go, folks. That's how we got the title.
That's how it happens.
The Birds and the Bees. Obviously, this is one of the important episodes this season and a lot of anticipation. It starts on a very sad note because last week, obviously, Brianna suffered a very big trauma. And this was a big change from the book that maybe, Matt, you can talk about how in the book it's played as a flashback. We don't know that Brianna's been raped before she meets her father, but we made a decision to do it a little different.
Yeah, we went round and round about this, and these are these things that, you know, when you read them, it plays out really well, you know. And structurally it's smooth, whereas visually it doesn't play as well. And we were, because you know it happens, visually you're going to know it happened. There's no way of hiding this unless
right.
We just cut out completely and then tell you later in an episode, oh, this happened.
Right.
You almost feel cheated, like we didn't show it.
Well, in the book, you're reading it, and you don't know anything about it. You're just enjoying the reunion of Brianna with her father. But here, we thought it would add another layer to have to see what she actually went through and play. You know, if we didn't do it in the TV show, instead of reading it, you'd be watching this woman, and you wouldn't see the other layer.
Yeah.
It would be after the fact that you found out, oh, my God, she was raped, and all that time she was just acting happy.
Yeah.
But here, if you know it's happened, you're watching this with kind of a joy and a tragic note under the surface, knowing that what the burden that Brianna carries of what happened to her. And we thought that would be way more interesting
dramatically. I think it makes the meeting of her father that much more poignant, is the fact that she is able to, as a person, suppress all of this.
Yeah.
and the joy, yeah, of meeting her father comes so much to the surface,
yeah,
that it outweighs this. It pushes,
yeah,
this so far to the side. And it's,
yeah,
not that it's gone, it's just that the joy of meeting Jamie Fraser comes out.
Yeah, the moment she falls in his arms.
This is also something
has a whole different meaning.
We don't in the beginning of this, we rarely do this, is we pick up almost immediate from the last episode, and we don't,
right,
do that very often. This feels very much with episode 8, feels,
yeah,
very much like a two-parter almost.
Yeah, I love, literally, she, comes back and Lizzie's so worried about her and offers her her hand, just hold my hand, because she knows Brianna's been,
yeah,
through something, and she, And
yeah, it doesn't take a lot to understand, you know, that this a woman that she cares about over the course of this journey of coming from Scotland that has gone through a really just the most traumatic thing you can go through. Well, you know, other than death.
Yeah. I think in the book, Roger does, you know, this was discussed a lot in the writer's room, whether he comes back for her or not, whether he tries to come and find her. He doesn't just abandon her. And in the book, I think he does come back, but he's on the street and he just yells up at the window or something. Yeah. And Brianna is just like, you know, doesn't respond to him. But we wanted to show, you know, a little more effort on his part. He comes back to the tavern. He wants to talk to her. And, you know, he's waylaid by Bonnet, who insists that he finish this journey that he committed to, and he, you know, takes Roger off on the ship. So, yeah.
Well, it's also one of those things that, you know, we here in the writer's room discuss quite a bit, is that the book readers have the ability to fill in the gaps because they know the story that isn't on the screen. Whereas the people who have never read the book, who is, you know, quite a bit of our audience as well, they don't. So we have to complete that story for them.
Yeah.
And we always have to kind of reconcile those two audiences that we have. That's why we leave some nuggets and Easter eggs for the book readers. But we also have to do some scenes like this because it would be hard to essentially rehabilitate Roger's character here if he just walks away from her and never comes back.
Yeah, I mean, they were married in his mind. They were handfast. They made love. They got in a bad fight, as can happen. But if he just took off on a ship and left her, I think it'd be very hard for the audience to get over that.
The audience that doesn't know his character, meaning the audience that hasn't read the books and know how the deep love they have and all the things that they share.
I mean, he followed her through 200 years.
Exactly.
And he's not just going to get in an argument and take off.
And that's why this scene is so important to the story and to the non-book reader who has to we have to fill that gap in.
Right.
Sorry, we're watching the scene. Sometimes that happens.
It totally happens. We start. Well, we're working hard on season 5 right now, and
we are.
We haven't seen these episodes in a while, so then we have to do a podcast. Suddenly, it's like, ooh, we get to go back and watch something fun from the last season, and then we get caught up in it.
Well, that was the sound of whiskey popping. Sorry.
I need to drink a lot to get through this one.
It's true. We spend the day a lot of times in the writer's room and we're writing, you know, outlines and working on scripts. And then we come in here closer to the evening and we do the podcast before we go home. And we haven't seen these episodes, although we've seen them quite a bit. We haven't seen them recently because when we do playback and mixing and sound and all that. That could be a month ago or 2 months ago, but the last time we saw it. And yes, we've seen every episode.
Yeah.
Probably at this stage, 15 to 20
many
times.
You know, we changed a lot of this from the book too. In the book, I believe it happens totally differently. Brianna is in a town where Fergus is. There's a lot. We just couldn't fit it all. It wasn't that we didn't like it or anything. It was just that Fergus was on trial for some crime that happened, and Jamie's in town as a witness, and Brianna happens to be in town. We thought it was cleaner just in this last episode, episode 8, called Wilmington, that they're all in Wilmington, so that Brianna, unbeknownst to her, you know, is in the same town as her dad and ends up finding him here, although she doesn't know it yet. She is only heartbroken that Roger's gone, and it just happens a little more cleanly, a little more connected, and in, to try to fit, you know, all the good parts into, you know, 1 hour. That's our challenge every week. And this episode in particular, we wanted to distill it.
I think we probably say that on every podcast because it is the bane of our existence is to trying to fit all this material into 50-something minutes every week. And when we put the puzzle pieces together, that's what we're trying to do is to get all the elements, the story elements of these of the books into essentially 13 episodes for this season. We knew Tony and I discussed this at the very beginning of the season. We have what we call tentpole moments, and we mark them out very early on. Of course, the meeting, as we're calling this, between Brianna and Jamie was probably the tentpole of the season, where you kind of work towards it at the peak of the tent. And then you work away from that as we go. And we knew we were going to write this one from day one. And we knew that we wanted to keep this moment as, as close as possible to what people remember reading.
Yeah.
We can't always do it exactly the same. But I think we found a way of giving you the moment kind of over the course of the episode rather than just in one quick shot.
Yeah, people kept referring to this as the reunion episode, the reunion of, but it's actually a union episode because
they've never
Jamie
met.
And Brianna have never met. There was a lot of discussion in the writer's room about whether we should keep this book moment since Jamie is relieving himself.
There wasn't that much. I don't think there was that much discussion. It was, we're going to do it.
We're going to, we knew we were going to do it.
This is exactly going to happen.
We were going to do it because this is one of those moments.
When we talk about the writer's room.
Important to keep.
Yeah.
It's such an iconic moment that I think there really wasn't another way to do it. And
once again, when we talk about the writer's room, there's a lot of layers here. We have the writers, and then we have executives, and we have, you know, studio network and things like that. So we present, you know, things up the line, and people have different takes on what should be on screen. But we fight for the moments that we really believe in.
Yeah, this was a moment we really fought to keep as true to the source material because we knew people had pictured it so much, including us. And I think the actors did a great job here of this meeting.
I think that was for me, that was the moment when he first says her name, looking at her.
Yeah.
Is the recognition. Yeah. Oh my God, that really is you standing there, you know?
And this, again, this moment, so much more powerful when you know what she's been through.
Yeah.
If you didn't know about the rape, it would just be like, Daddy, here you are, you know? Or, my father, I'm meeting him, and it would just be this... But it wouldn't have this layer of, oh my God, she was just attacked. And now here's Jamie Frazier, who is the king of men, who is the great protector. And when she falls into his arms, it's like she's home, you know, and that she's with a man who, I mean, she's carrying so much weight here of what just happened to her that it makes it really heartbreaking, I think.
Well, like I said, that all of it goes away. For a moment, you know, the moment she's in his arms, she's safe.
Yeah, and she's exactly. And that's what we love about Jamie Frazier. He makes everyone feel safe that's around him. And that's what part of what Claire loves about him. And, you know.
Obviously, it was very cold the day we filmed this. we can't get away from that. But it was all day. It was a cold, wet day. But Sophie and Sam,
they did a great job. Sam is amazing.
Sam is really good in this, isn't he?
And now he's going to take her to see Claire. And this is another moment that we really wanted, you know, I think in one version of the script, it was that they were walking down the street with the sun behind him and kind of silhouetted in this beautiful halo. And it was Meryl that came in and said, you know, in the book, they're on a bench. And I think I was kind of like, well, a bench isn't that exciting. This beautiful scene with the sun behind him. And then ultimately after we talked, we were like, you know what? the bench is the way to go. That's the way it is. There's something about how we've all pictured it. And there wasn't, I think part of the reason too, is there wasn't a bench on the street when it was built, but we just called up and told Gary and those guys, we need a bench. We want to do it on bench. And that's how Claire first sees them, is sitting next to each other. And, I like how Jamie says that, because he was a printer. So he's like, how dare that printer mess this up? It's very sloppy work.
Yeah.
But, you know, this was another thing that we changed, because in the book, I believe it was like maybe 10 years before the fire happened. We needed, for the TV purposes, to give it a little more sense of urgency. So we created the smudge date so that she doesn't know it. This could be a couple months from now. Or a few years from now, but that's why she had the urgency to warn them.
The not knowing is better, you know, and for the series. Yeah. It's better not knowing.
I love this.
I love this scene too.
I love it because young Ian's always like, we kept talking like, how are we going to explain this? I mean, and then we finally settled on like, he just goes, well, I've learned with Auntie Claire, it's best not to ask too many questions. And it's a bit of a cheat, but it's really what we have set up, that there's so much that's gone on. And, you know, I think it works in the moment in that scene.
There's Rollo. Looking magnificent as always.
Well, Lizzie thinks so.
He's not asleep, so that's good. He does look like a wolf, I'll tell you that.
Lizzie's already got a crush on young Ian, and who doesn't? He's so cute. John Bell's just adorable.
And I think young Ian has kind of a crush on his cousin, which is Brianna.
Yeah.
Once again, these are kind of the things that you wish you had more time to play out and let kind of, you know, breathe a little more. But, you know, we're just so limited. But in a weird way, if we had double the amount of episodes, then you would have the issue of it being too slow. You know, there's a line and you have to keep the pace going, especially for people, once again, who haven't read the books. You know, they don't fill in the story. We have to be the story, the sole storytellers to them. And I was saying this to somebody. I had not read the Harry Potter series when I saw the movies, the book series. And I saw the movies, and I didn't really get some of the things that were going on. And I know other people have, and they're like, oh, no, this is happening, and that's happening. And they're like, oh, but that's not on the screen. And I don't think they really, it didn't matter to them, because so many people have read the books and they could get away with it.
Yeah.
And I don't think we're in a place where, you know, every single one of our audience members has not read the books, because we are growing our audience quite a bit.
Yeah. So we wanted the callback here, obviously, to 401, which we also wrote together, that's where Stephen Bonnet originally attacked them. And, you know, we wanted to build in a reason that Brianna keeps this secret, because when she hears from young Ian that they were attacked by this man, and he not only just, you know, took the ring, but he killed a friend of theirs, it sort of cements in, you know, the reason that she's not going to just pop up and say that, you know, that she was attacked by this guy. She realizes the irony, and she doesn't want her dad, you know, Jamie, to go after him. Because if Jamie blames himself for what happened on the riverboat, imagine what he's going to feel when he learns that she was attacked by Bonnet. So it really puts this burden, a more heavier burden on Brianna, that she can't ever tell this secret now.
Yeah. I don't know. And one of the little things here you'll notice about the young Ian character is there's little teeny pieces on his costume now that are starting to, he's incorporating a lot of the Cherokee pieces, the armband, the little pins on his collar, the nice sheath around his neck. Mm-hmm. He's starting to really kind of acclimate to the area, and he's taken with the Cherokees. Yeah. So it's really great the way Terry and Nina started to
threading those little things in.
I know they're small things, but that's, I think, what makes our show that much more special, is that
detail and the authenticity that we go to great lengths to do is, I think, pays off. Yeah, this obituary is very, weighs on them because they haven't been able to change the past. So it's not, they can't freak out over that because they just know what are they going to do about it? They have to live with that and just wait it out and see how it happens.
I like this moment, how proud Jamie is of his land.
Yeah.
He's excited to show his daughter. And I think that...
I really like the music here, too, when Bear wrote a theme for Fraser's Ridge. It's a little different than all the Scottish-themed music he's done in the past, and it's really evocative and fits the beauty of the land.
I like that. That's a little nod that Jamie is a progressive guy. He thinks outside the box. He's not.
Yeah.
Even though he's a, in a way contemporary man, but he is actually a man of his time as well. I like the part where he, in the book at least, he says, he's a violent man, and he is when he has to be.
Yeah.
Who's this guy?
Murtaugh. I like how actually it was, I was like, we had the same issue as Young Ian. What are we going to have this big explanation of Brianna and how she got here and all this? And actually, in the script, it was you that inserted that just had Murtaugh say to Brianna, what took you so long?
Yeah, because he knows. Once he knew they had a daughter,
then
it was like,
where have you been? Of course you'd show up.
Of course you'd show up.
Yeah, I love that moment. It's just so beautiful seeing them in the same frames together, because up until now we've never had Brianna even on screen in a frame with Jamie. And just now on the ridge when we saw the three of them lined up, and there when we see Claire and him at the dinner table, it's like you just drink in these images in this episode. I think it's one people will watch over and over just for the joy of seeing these people united that you never thought would be together. This is such a challenging scene for Sophie Skelton, that she's really got to play the happiness of being with her family again, and yet this secret that she's carrying. It was a real challenge for her. She had to really play that double thing of, I'm putting on a good face and I am happy to be here, but there's moments where you just see her drift off a bit, and you see the weight of what she's carrying, and it's almost imperceptible, but of course Claire sees it. And we wrote it purposefully that way, that only her mom, who knows her super well, Jamie wouldn't see it, Murtaugh wouldn't see it, But Claire, the way she looks at her, is like, something's up, because I know my daughter, and there's a little something.
I like this. This is one of the things we try to do when we talk to all the writers, and we say, hey, maybe there's something in one book that we can apply to the stories now. And you dig out all the old stories. And this is one of them, is where Murtaugh tells a story of how Jamie, when he fostered at Leoc, you know, got into trouble with Dougal. And we couldn't fit that story in back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it fit perfectly here, and it comes out. And I think it's one of the things that we try to do is,
yeah,
you never know what you're going to get on the TV series. And this is what we would call an Easter egg. It's one of those moments, yes, where you go, oh, yes. You know, I remember that from...
from the books, all the way back in season one.
Right.
Yeah.
So...
and this is season four. So it's like, hey, we need a story for Murtaugh to tell. Ah, what about that Jamie's first kiss?
I know a lot of fans who read the books, they'll go, you didn't do my favorite part. Well, unfortunately... if every 30 million book readers wrote in their favorite part, we'd get 30 million different parts.
There's a part where Jamie's talking about how he knows the trees and he loves the trees, and the leaves turn a certain way when it's going to rain. And it's a small thing, but it was one of my favorite passages. And I'm like determined to get it in somewhere. And then someone pointed out to me, you're not going to be able to get it in because it was back in Scotland. They're American now. But I'm like, all right, it'll be American trees. But it's going to be in here before the series is over. I really hope so.
I hope so, too. Just so we don't have to hear about it anymore.
I know, I bring it up all the time.
You know, and things like this is, you know, in the books, we know Murtaugh's fate in the books is different than it is on the television show. And,
yes,
you know, we need to create story for him. And we need to make it seamlessly go in and out of the story that we already have.
Right.
It's important. And I think, you know, it's funny. We had said this in season one, is we may go off the path of the story, but we always turn and come back and get back onto the main road again.
Yeah.
And there are multiple reasons why we have to go off the path. Some of it's production, some of it's time, some of it's actor availability, some of it's scheduling, some of it's weather. You know, you never know what it is, but we always try to get back to that main road as fast as we can to keep going forward.
Or connect the dots like this. Like Meryl and I were just talking in the podcast about our decision to put the obituary with Frank. And here we were connecting where she tells Claire, like, he knew, you know, Frank knew. And that's something Claire didn't know, Frank knew she came back.
Right.
And
I, you know, it's a great moment for Claire to actually realize that, like, wow, the impact of decisions, you know.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of neat too that Brianna, now that she's seen Claire and Jamie together, before, you know, she grew up knowing something was amiss in her parents' relationship, even though they put on a good front for her and they genuinely cared about each other. She knew that there was something here. And then when she found out, she was angry at first, of course, to know that her mom loved another man. But now that she's here, she sees the love between Jamie and Claire and the little moments. And she sees that they belong together and are meant for each other. And that's got to be bittersweet. It's painful, but also kind of a validation of, oh, I get it now. That's why my parents' marriage didn't work. Because if Jamie had been a jerk or someone that she thought, well, you don't seem to go with him, it'd be like, why did you waste 20 years with me and dad when this guy is not worthy? And I think she sees already that there's something worth it here.
We actually brought this ship from South Africa. We brought parts of it from South Africa when we shot season three. Mm. We Gary Steele and his team rehabilitated, redesigned, But some of the workings of it, we put on a big container ship and brought up.
Roger's asking for the stones in payment.
Always a lassie. I like that line. It's just so much foreshadowing in that scene that, believe it or not, we talk about that scene still today when we're breaking, say, episodes in the future.
No spoilers.
No spoilers.
But
that
yes.
wasn't a spoiler. I didn't give anything away.
You may see those stones again.
I am the
Let's
king
just say
of
that.
Not giving anything away. I think most of the people who know anything about me know that.
No, you're very clever with that. You're a tease.
Here's a thing that also we have to do is we have to cover a lot of ground time-wise. We have to, although a lot of writers like a good montage, I hate a montage. They're not easy to shoot. They're not easy to convey and put together on film. That months and months are passing here.
Well, there's one of those moments that you see Brianna, you know, maybe looking sad, you know, and still carrying, you know, her burden of what happened.
You know, and the other, you know, what's fun about these things is Sam and Katrina and Sophie, they all love when we do the shooting,
it's fun, the
archery or anything like that. They get to practice with Jim.
Like, oh, you have to go
armor.
For rifle practice. Oh, really? You know, like, yeah, it's really fun shooting. Those muskets are very heavy. I've held them, and
they are.
I'm like,
well,
how does anyone even shoot that? Yeah, they're real guns.
They're real.
Jim Elliott, our armory expert, does an amazing job. And
he's been with us
from day one.
He takes care of all these, all of our weapons for the show. They all work. They're all real. We do have what we call soft, so it's an exact duplicate, but they're soft. And that's in case people are going to be fighting or hitting or doing something with them. But for the most part, every musket or pistol or knife that you see is real, or dirk. They're all real. They're all usable. So
love that they're making whiskey. It's just like family activity. Everybody hang out at the still and make the family whiskey.
I think this is one of those moments that was in the book. It doesn't play out quite like that here, but it's, you know, you try to figure out how to make this word work in a natural setting where, you know, and then add Murtaugh to the scene.
Yeah.
Because it's not Murtaugh in the book.
Yeah.
Obviously, because he's dead.
Well, what's important here is that Jamie is going to such great lengths to just tiptoe around everything. And, well, they both are, he and Brianna, because it's new and fragile, their relationship. But Claire is realizing that, you know, if they both are on their best behavior, they're never going to really get to know each other as deeply as they're meant to. And she's giving the advice to just be yourself and don't be afraid to talk about Frank. You know, Bri is feeling a little guilty that she's getting to know her biological father, and is that a betrayal of Frank who raised her? So it's a complex thing that's happening here. It's like a coming together of two people that are joined but live their whole lives apart, and now, you know, they're very much connected, but they're strangers to each other. And oh, I love this moment because, you know, I think back in another script we wrote, Matt, she, you know, Claire tells Jamie that she smiles in her sleep like you do. And now Jamie, you know, we knew we wanted a moment where he saw her smiling in her sleep, and he's remembering that and thinking, wow, it's like me. She does that like me.
Believe it or not, we do try to fit these little, what I call quiet moments, the small moments. If you lace together enough of the small moments, they make big moments. You know, they make the, I think anybody can have a battle scene. You know, any show does, you know, everybody does battle scenes. Everybody does, you know, the big shocking moments. It's what I think Outlander does better than anybody is, well, scratch that, not better than anybody. I think what we do well is, because there's a lot of shows that do things well, that we take time with our little moments and we let them breathe and, you know, we look for them. And it's just like that moment where Jamie looks at his daughter and we let it breathe for a little bit.
Yeah.
We don't cut away from it. We don't move away from it. And it's important to build. And we wish we could have a million more. Unfortunately, we can't.
Well, that's what was fun about this episode is it really does breathe. I mean, there's not a lot of incident in it, what we call, you know, there's not a lot of plot. It's just this, these two people getting to know each other and they go on a bee hunt, you know, which is not some big action thing that happens. They're just walking in the woods, eating an apple, getting honey, you know, from a beehive.
It's so important to the story, though. That's the key. And when we talk about this, when we do notes calls, when we discuss, because we hear the word, it's slow. And we're like, yeah, good.
We hear nothing happens.
Nothing happens. We're like, no, it
does.
Something
big is happening. Something very, what could be bigger than Jamie and his daughter getting to know each other? That's happening, folks.
And that's what we say. Slow. Yes, it's slow. That's right. Yeah. It's slow and good. And it means a lot to the story. Because if everything was fast paced, we'd be a different show.
Yeah, that's what makes me love the show and want to write on the show, because you can write these scenes that just, it's not like, oh, we've had two pages, time to move to a different scene.
When we send the writers out, whether it's us or other writers, the instruction is basically write a scene as long as you want, as long as it's good.
Yeah.
Where, as we both, Tony and I know, we worked on other shows where if you were writing a 4-page scene, that's too long.
Oh, yeah.
And you'd have to cut that by half.
Yeah.
You know, you can't. I will say, very proud of the visual effects department here. No bee was harmed in the making of this scene.
Very important. To the planet.
these are all visual effects bees. Yeah. They're
these
not
are trained
real
bees.
So kudos to our visual effects department here. We had multiple meetings on how many bees, what are the bees doing, should there be bees on the hive, should there be bees on the flowers, and after about four of those meetings, well, now you know why we drink whiskey all the time. So
when I came back from Scotland, I bought a bunch of Scottish honey and brought it back to the office in honor of the bee hunt, because I know that everyone loved
I think this
you know,
is the
this
question
bee
that most of the audience is dying to know. Does Scottish honey taste any different than American honey?
I didn't get any of the honey because I gave it out.
So you didn't try the honey
I
there?
I didn't get a chance to try the honey because it was all eaten up. But I can say that Scottish chocolate, because I did bring some chocolate for myself, the Scottish chocolate is really phenomenal. It's delicious. I don't know what it is, but I got to say it's better. There's some explanation for why.
Someone told
bitter
me, and I don't know if this is true. Someone will either tell me I'm wrong, not me personally, but someone told me that in Europe or in Scotland and in Europe, they don't put whatever the coating, there's a coating that they use here that they don't use there.
Oh, so it won't melt.
I guess so it won't melt.
Because here it could melt, but there it's so freaking cold.
Look, that, I don't hold me
to
that.
That could be a wives' tale, but whatever
somebody
it
told
is,
me, but I will tell you this,
the
chocolate is
great.
Phenomenal.
So if you get
in,
a chance to
Scotland.
Sample, I did bring...
And I'm sure it's phenomenal in London, too. It's just, there's, we eat more chocolate in Scotland than we do anywhere else.
It goes nice with whiskey.
It is. We have a thing we do here. In season one, actually, we had a group that didn't drink whiskey and a group that did. And I suggested that we get some warm chocolate chip cookies and we bring them into the room. And we ate chocolate chip cookies and drank whiskey. And I converted quite a few people into whiskey drinkers because the combination...
It's a pretty...
It really goes well. So those of you having Outlander parties, I would recommend some chocolate chip, really good home-baked. And I know that our fans are absolutely phenomenal cooks and bakers, and we see the recipes. Bake yourself some
cookies.
Chocolate chip cookies. Pour yourself your favorite whiskey. Yeah. And
then you're not drinking on an empty stomach, too.
That, too. Look, it's a health benefit. We're here to help.
Yeah. Now, I love this scene because, and it almost got cut because sometimes when we're running late in the schedule, we don't have time to get everything. And I know the question came up, do we really need to see them come back? Can we just, they had the bee hunt. But I thought it was important that Claire see the two people she loves the most come back and that we have this scene where they're eating the honey. It's just a beautiful shot, and it's just a beautiful family moment. I think we had them improvise right there, what they were saying, and they were saying, good job, good job. And I think we had to drop it out in editing because we were like, good job. This is kind of modern. They wouldn't actually be saying that.
Yes.
Jamie wouldn't say good job.
Sometime, we... improvising, a lot of times you go right to the more modern speak, so you have to end up not using 99% of it. Plus, nobody really improvises.
No, we rarely improvise, but that scene was specifically written MOS, which means without sound, because we knew we just wanted music and the visual of them enjoying the honey by firelight, and that would just be a beauty shot and a nice, poignant moment. And I love here how Jamie is like, she called me Da,
Well, this is one of those moments where, we took, in the earlier scene where we kind of taken the meeting, when they meet, they kind of go through that whole dialogue section in one fell swoop. But we separated it and moved it into another section.
Yeah.
So you kind of get it in two places. And it's what we did, with the reunion. You wrote episode 305, I wrote episode 306, where we gave them a reunion kind of two times, one from Claire's perspective, one from Jamie's perspective. And this is kind of a way of stretching it out a little bit. Where you get this, because it's all about the getting to know them, each other, Jamie getting to know Bree getting to know Jamie. And we wanted to make it play over the whole episode.
Yeah,
so you had to kind of break it up a little bit.
Yeah, I believe that's the one small thing we changed, because in the book, as soon as she meets him, she says, I don't know what to call you.
Yes.
And he's like, call me Da, it's simple. And we love the line, call me Da, it's simple. But we felt that maybe she'd feel weird. She hadn't quite transitioned from Frank. She just met him, and to call him father. And we thought that that would go better after the bee hunt, when they'd spent time together and he'd sort of earned it a little, and it would mean more to Jamie, too.
And that's what it is. It's more important that it means more to Jamie than it does to her.
It meant something to him that she finally called him Da rather than just saying
this is it right here, the moment where he
looks really...
He almost tears up, and I like that about it, is that in the moment, in the alley after he's taken a pee, it doesn't mean as much.
No,
but now after the hunt,
he's like,
and he says it, he almost breaks up. He almost breaks down.
I love how he's like, Now I don't want her to
go. Oh, my God, the bird shot. See, you know how many bird shots we had to look at.
I put the birds in there. It inspired you to have that title.
No, I get it, but see? We looked at 5 zillion bird
shots.
That
was before I even knew the title was Birds and the Bees. We wanted something. We needed something that motivated
when we say Brianna when she says we, she means her.
I felt it was stronger if Brianna sort of had something that motivates her to finally confess to her mom that she's pregnant, and that if she was looking at a baby birds with a mother bird, it hit home to her the point that, oh my God, I'm going to have a baby. I need to tell my mom about this. It was just making her think about it. I thought it was a cool way to do that. We went through a million stuff. Those birds weren't just out there, by the way, in that bush.
Yeah.
Movie magic. I think Alicia went through a lot of stock shots.
Alicia is our post-production producer.
And she showed us quite a few bird nest shots to pick the perfect one. And she always finds great stock shots for us.
Yeah, so when you're seeing shots of the owl and the eagle and the birds, I believe robins, that's Alicia in post. She's digging through millions of stock shots to find the perfect one because they have to match a lot of things, the lighting, the plants, the everything else. You know, there's so many things that have to match.
They have to native to Scotland when we're in Scotland. They have to be native to North Carolina when we're in North Carolina.
That's actually one of the people ask always, what's the most challenging thing you do on the show? And now that we're filming in Scotland and now that we're filming Scotland for North Carolina is the animals.
Yeah.
You know, we have very keen viewers. I mean, they're spot on. They you know, not only do they watch the show, they watch it 10 times and they pick out things. And luckily, Scotland is you know, rampant with rhododendron, which so is North Carolina.
Yeah.
So that works out nicely. The first three seasons, it killed us because we had to try to find shots where we didn't mm-hmm. show it. And now we can show it everywhere. So it's great. But we don't have the same birds. We don't have the same flora and fauna all the time. So we have to either add that, we have to find it. We are our greens department, which is phenomenal. We have one of the most amazing greens department, which falls under the art department. But we have a whole garden area where they grow plants for us. And
we grew the potatoes that used that first
not only
season.
Potatoes, but half the things you see, they're growing.
Yeah.
And then replanting. We had a scene earlier in the season where they took strawberry plants and they put strawberries on so Claire and Jamie can eat, so they could pick them and eat them.
Right.
So, and all that strawberry patch was completely created. And I love that they go to that.
Yeah.
We say we want it and they do the extraordinary to
make
it happen.
Right.
I know we're talking about strawberries and plants at this most. It's a very profound moment,
Well, this is where the story starts to turn a bit because in this episode, it's all kind of poignant and tender and slow and in the beginning, but now, this tragedy that's been the dark cloud over this starts to come out as she finally tells her mom what happened, and she doesn't want to tell them because, I mean, for God's sakes, this happened because she was trying to get her mom's ring back. And so the last thing you want to do is say, I did this trying to get your ring and then I got hurt, because she knows how much that would kill Claire to know.
And Jamie.
That's why she doesn't tell her this was over the ring.
And
Jamie. And so, and for Claire to go like, oh, I'm so happy my daughter's here. You know, that she found me in this century. I missed her so much. And now it's like, oh, but the realities of this century and the danger is not something I want my daughter to be exposed to. But so it's the other side of the coin here, so to speak. And it's like she feels, it's tearing her up that this is happening. And
I wish they would have, I mean, I don't usually say this, but I wish they would have swung around a little bit and got a little bit of Sophie on that too, you know. You know what? I got to say, I like Jamie in his glasses.
I like him in the glasses,
you know,
too.
I wear reading glasses. Cool. There's no shame in it.
No.
And you know what I always say in the room? What would Jamie Frazier do? You know what? He'd put his damn glasses on. Yeah. That's what he would do.
Well, I like that he reads by the fire. It's like family reading hour. And
you know, if I had a fireplace, I'd read by the fire. But it's Southern California, and, you know, you really don't need that.
No. But we have family reading hour. It's cool. But now she has some news for him, and Jamie...
This is one of the scenes that we really discussed this in post for sure.
Yeah.
Multiple times. When we say post, we mean editing.
Editorial.
We...
you know, he...
I do love the framing of that shot.
He doesn't explode there like you might expect the dad to do, but I think he's so shocked and processing this information is so stunning.
That's what
we
talked about.
He's going to explode later, and we felt it was best that he was just restrained in that moment. It's restrained fury, and then
it's also taking it all in. You got to give a person a beat to take it in, you know.
Yeah.
Speaking of rhododendron, they're surrounded by them. This moment was talked about also.
Yeah,
we had to figure out a way of, and I do like the intercutting here.
Yeah,
of her finding the ring, her discovering, and you
the
know
bonnet
most
ankle.
Most mothers of. Daughters will clean up the rooms and understand. So we talked about how would she find the ring. We're like, you know what? Claire's probably used to going up in the room and doing a little laundry. There is the ring.
That's a nice shot.
I love
shot
that
there.
Shot.
Well, this
David Moore, who directed this episode, did a fantastic job.
This is very different in the book because it's built around a misunderstanding about the name that Jamie doesn't know. It's Roger McKenzie, Roger Wakefield.
Yep.
It plays in the book, but we thought that for the screen version, we really needed something a little more solid so we built our story more around the fact that Lizzie actually thinks she witnessed, you know.
Well,
that
she doesn't
she
think
saw.
She actually did witness.
She did witness
Roger being rough with Brianna in period.
That's right.
In the period, Roger would have been a ruffian. He would have been.
He came in and grabbed her when he saw her. Lizzie doesn't know that's her.
And you don't,
someone
and that's
she knows
exactly.
And she thinks it's the rapist. So when she says to Jamie, because to justify Jamie giving Roger the beatdown that he does, we needed something pretty solid because Jamie wouldn't really go off that half-cocked unless, and we had Lizzie say, I'm sure it's the guy. I know it's the guy. And in fact, we had a lot of conversations, you and I, about when we were wrestling with this, that we referenced the movie Goodfellas about how Ray Liotta, when he comes over and, you know, someone has hurt his woman, he goes over there with a pistol. The guy doesn't even get a hello. He just pistol whips the guy.
Yeah, there's a moment in Goodfellas where Henry Hill, the character, is so angry, he just goes and reacts. And we needed to get Jamie to that moment where he just reacts.
Yeah. Where there's not a lot of talking.
And there can't be any talking because as soon as
yeah.
Roger has a conversation with him, Jamie would realize, oh, wait a minute, hold on.
Yeah, Roger would have time to say, hold on. I love Brianna. I'm her boy.
I'm not the person you're thinking about. Yes.
And we thought there's no way if they stand there and talk, no one's going to believe that unless this happens really fast.
Yeah.
So Roger doesn't even get a word. He comes in and...
When we did the tone meeting with the director and everything, it was like there can be no words other than, hey, hello,
hello.
And then boom, The tiger attacks.
Is unleashed. Yeah,
and the tiger being Jamie Frazier.
And Jamie's rage, because he just got his daughter. He just met her, got to know her, and now he hears that someone has hurt her. Not only, he wants to protect her, and so his fury is unleashed. So
it's another
way that we... And here's where Claire finds out who it is.
We tell the story here is that we... we like to do this here on Outlander. Is we give you these poignant moments. We give a slow episode, and at the very end, we flip it and go, "Well, here's what's coming."
And here we go.
We gave you that breath.
There you go.
We had a lot of discussions about this.
Oh, in reality, he beat him. I mean, I think he punched him like 20 times, and the network kept saying, "Okay." When we showed them the first cut, they were like, he would be dead if Jamie hit him that many times. And they kept wanting to make the punches less. And we kept wanting to make them more. And we were literally down to bargaining. Okay, there's 9 punches. Oh, how about 7? No, how about 8? We were just negotiating, because the point was it couldn't just be a regular, you know, a regular fist fight. It had to be a I practically killed him kind of situation, because that's what we're implying, is that Rogers... He would have killed him if
Ian wouldn't show had not shown up, he would have killed him. And I think that's the most important part here, is that Jamie would have killed him. The makeup department did a fantastic job creating Roger's face. It so much so when we were looking at the mock-ups, it made people ill. And that's what we were going for, was we were going for that.
The shock of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you for being here with us. We always enjoy, doing the podcasts. Well, at least Tony enjoys them. Anyway, we do enjoy them.
It's a nice treat at the end of the day.
Being here.
Thank you, Matt.
Please come back for episode 10 next week and find out what the hell happens to Roger.
I don't know. It doesn't look too good for him right now.
No, it doesn't. And Jamie might be in a pickle himself. So anyway,
I think so.
Thank you, everybody.
All right. Thanks.
All right. Have a good night.
Cheers.